You see a lot of blood in this job. Don't attempt to drink it, that's my advice, said Angua, still rummaging. Ah, he's got a rune necklace, and... She pulled a hand out of the dead dwarf's jerkin. Can't make this out very well, but I can smell ink, so it may be a letter. Okay, let's get out of here. She stood up. Did you hear me? The sign was written by someone dying, said Sally, still keeping her distance. Well? It's probably a curse. So? We didn't kill him, said Angua, getting to her feet with some difficulty. They looked down at the liquid mud, now rising to their knees. Do you think it cares? Said Sally, matter-of-factly. No, but I think there may be another way out in that last tunnel we passed, said Angua, looking back along the tunnel. She pointed. Scuttling along with blind determination, a line of worms marched along the dripping roof, almost as fast as the mud flowed down below. They were heading into the side tunnel in a glowing stream. Sally shrugged. It's worth a try, yes? They left, and the sound of their splashing soon died away. Slowly the mud rose, rustling in the gloom. The trail of worms gradually disappeared overhead. The worms that made the sign remained, though, because such a feast as this was worth dying for. Their glow winked out, one insect at a time. The darkness beneath the world caressed the sign, which flamed red and died. Darkness remained. On this day in 1802, the painter Methodia Rascal tried putting the thing under a heap of old sacks, in case it woke up the chicken, and finished the last troll using his smallest brush to paint the eyeballs. It was 5 a.m. Rain rustled out the sky, not hard, but with a gentle persistence. In Satel Square, and in the Plaza of Broken Moons, it hissed on the white ash of the bonfires, occasionally exposing the orange glow, which would briefly sizzle and spit. A family of gnolls were sniffing around, each one dragging his or her little cart. A few officers were keeping an eye on them. Gnolls weren't choosy about what they collected, provided it didn't actually struggle, and even then there were rumours. But they were tolerated. Nothing cleaned up the place like a gnoll. From here they looked like little trolls, each with a huge haystack on its back. That represented everything it owned, and mostly what it owned was rotten. Sam Vimes winced at the pain in his side. Just his luck. Two coppers injured in the entire damn affair, and he had to be one of them. Igor had done his best, but broken ribs were broken ribs, and it'd be a week or two before the suspicious green ointment made much difference. His hand twinged in sympathy with them, too. Still, he enjoyed a bit of a warm glow about the whole thing. They had used good old-fashioned policing, and since good old-fashioned policemen are invariably outnumbered, he'd employed the good old-fashioned police methods of cunning, deceit, and any damn weapon you could lay your hands on. It had hardly been a fight at all. The dwarfs had mostly been sitting and singing gloomy songs because they fell over when they tried to stand up, or had tried to stand up and were now lying down and snoring. The trolls were, on the other hand, mostly upright, but went over when you pushed them. One or two, a little clearer in the head than the others, had put up a ponderous and laughable fight, but had fallen to that most old-fashioned of police methods, the well-placed boot. Well, most of them had. Vimes shifted to ease the aching in his side. He should have seen that one coming. But all's well that ends well, eh? No deaths at all, and just to put a little cherry on the morning cake, he had in his hand an early morning edition of the Times, in which a leading article deplored the gang stalking the city and wondered if the watch was up to the job of cleaning up the streets. Well, yes, I think we are, you pompous twerp. Vimes struck a match on a plinth and lit a cigar in recognition of a petty but darkly satisfying triumph. Gods knew they needed one. The watch had taken a pounding over the whole damn Coombe Valley thing, and it was good to hand the lads something to be proud of for a change. All in all, it was definitely a result. He stared at the plinth. He didn't remember what statue had been there. It celebrated generations of graffiti artists now. A piece of troll graffiti adorned it now, obliterating everything done by the artists who used mere paint. He read, Mr. Shine, him diamond. Mine sign, city scrawl, he thought. Things go bad and people are moved to write on the walls. Commander? He turned. Captain Carrot, armour gleaming, was hurrying toward him, his face, as usual, radiating an expression of 100% pure keen. "I thought I'd told everyone not on prisoner duty to get some sleep, Captain," said Vimes. "Just clearing up a few things, sir," said Carrot. "Lord Vetinari sent a message down to the yard. He wants a report. I thought I'd better tell you, sir." I was just thinking, Captain, said Vimes expansively. Should we put up a little plaque? Something simple. It could say something like, Battle of Coombe Valley not fought here, Groon the fifth, year of the prawn. Could we get them to do a bloody stamp? What do you think? I think you need to get some sleep yourself, Commander, said Carrot. And technically, it isn't Coombe Valley until Saturday. Of course, monuments to battles that didn't take place might be stretching things a bit, but a stamp? Lady Sybil really worries about you, sir, Carrot broadcast concern. The fizz in Vimes's head subsided. As if awakened by the reference to Sybil, the debtors of his body queued up to waive their overdue IOUs. Feet, dead, tired, and in need of a bath. Stomach gurgling. Ribs on fire. Back aching. Brain drunk on its own poisons. Bath, sleep, eat. Good ideas, but still must do things. As our Mr. Pessimal, he said. Igor's fixed him up, sir. He's a bit amazed at all the fuss. Now, I know I can't order you to go and see his lordship. It's a vampire thing. The cellar behind the demolished wall had some barrels in it, and looked as though it was regularly used. There was a proper door, too. Rather dull, repetitive music filtered down from between the boards. There was a trapdoor in them. Okay, said Angua. There's people up there. I can smell them. I count 57 hearts beating, said Sally. Angua gave her a look. You know, that's one particular talent I'd keep to myself if I was you, she said. Sorry, Sergeant. It's not the sort of thing people want to hear, Angua went on. I mean, I personally am quite capable of crushing a man's skull in my jaws, but I don't go around telling everyone. I shall make a note of it, Sergeant, said Sally, with a meekness that was quite possibly feigned. Good. Now, what do we look like? Swamp monsters? Yes, Sergeant. Your hair looks dreadful, just like a great lump of green slime. Green? I'm afraid so. And my emergency dress is back down there somewhere, said Angua. It's past dawn, too. Can you go bats now? In daylight! 150 disoriented bits of me? No. But you could get out as a wolf, couldn't you? I'd kind of prefer not to be a slime monster coming through the floor if it's all the same to you, said Angua haughtily. Yes, I can see that. It does not pay to advertise. Sally flicked away a lump of nameless ooze. Ugh, this stuff is foul. So the best we can hope for is that when we make a run for it, no one will recognize us, said Angua, pulling a lump of wobbly green stuff from her hair. At least we... Oh, no. What's wrong? Said Sally. Nobby Nobs. He's up there. I can smell him. She pointed urgently at the boards overhead. You mean Corporal Nobs? The little... man with the spots, said Sally. We're not under a watch house, are we? Said Angua, looking around in panic. I don't think so. Someone's dancing by the sound of it. But look, how can you smell one human in the middle of all this? It never leaves you, believe you. Look, don't the management object to you coming in here? Fred managed, shifting even further down in his seat. Oh, no. They like having a watchman in, said Nobby, still watching the stage. They say it makes people behave. Anyway, I only come in so's I can walk Betty home. Betty being... Tawny's actually only a pole name, Nobby said. She says no one would be interested in an exotic dancer with a name like Betty. She says it sounds like she'd be better with a bowl of cake mixture. Colon shut his eyes, trying to banish a mental conjunction of the bronzed, lithe figure on stage and a bowl of cake mixture. "'I think I could do with a breath of fresh air,' he groaned. "'Oh, not yet, Sarge. Broccoli's on next. She can touch the back of her head with her foot, you know.' "'I don't believe that,' said Fred Colon. "'She can, Sarge. I've seen.' "'I don't believe there's a dancer called Broccoli.' "'Well, she did used to be called Candy, Sarge, but then she heard that broccoli is better for you.' "'Corporal Nobs!' The sound appeared to be coming from under the table. Nobby stared at Fred Colon and then looked down. "'Yes?' he ventured, with caution. "'This is Sergeant Angua,' said the floor. "'Ow?' said Nobby. "'What is this place?' the voice continued. "'The Pink Pussycat Club, Sergeant,' said Nobby obediently. "'Oh, gods!' There was some conversation down below, and then the voice said, "'Are there women up there?' "'Yes, Sergeant. What are you doing down there, Sarge?' "'Giving you orders, Nobby,' said the voice from below. "'Are there women?' "'Yes, Sarge, lots.' "'Good. Please ask one to come down into the beer cellar. We'll need a couple of buckets of warm water and some towels. Got that? Nobby was aware that the musicians had stopped playing and Tawny had paused in mid-drop and split. Everyone was listening to the talking floor.
Yes, Sergeant, said Nobby. I've got it.
And some clean clothes. And, there was subterranean whispering, make that several buckets of water and a scrubbing brush. And a comb. And another comb. And more towels. Oh, and two pairs of shoes. Size 6 and...
4½, really?
OK. And is Fred Colon with you, or is that a stupid question? Fred cleared his throat.
I'm here, Sergeant, he reported. But I only came along to...
Good. I want to borrow a set of your stripes. I've got a bad feeling about the next few hours, and I don't want anyone to forget I'm a sergeant. Got that, the pair of you?
It's full moon, Fred whispered to Nobby as one man to another. And then he said aloud, Yes, Sergeant, this may take a while.
No, it won't. Because you've got a werewolf and a vampire down here, understand? I'm having a really bad hair day, and she's got toothache. We come up in 10 minutes looking human, or we come up anyway.
What?
There was more whispering.
Why a beetroot? Why in God's names is a girly show likely to contain a beetroot?
What?
Okay, will an apple do?
Nobby, Lance Constable von Humperding needs an apple urgently, or something else that she can bite. Now jump to it.
Coffee was only a way of stealing time that should by rights belong to your slightly older self. Vimes drank 2 cups, and had a wash and at least an attempt at a shave, which made him feel quite human if he ignored the sensation that parts of his head were stuffed with warm cotton wool. At last, deciding that he felt as good as he was going to and could probably handle quite long questions, he was ushered into the oblong office of the Patrician of Ankh-Morpork. "Ah, Commander," said Lord Vetinari, looking up after a considered interval and pushing aside some paperwork. "Thank you for coming. It seems that congratulations are in order, so I am told." "And why is that, sir?" said Vimes, putting on his special blank talking-to-Vetinari face. "Come now, Vimes. Yesterday it looked as if we would be having a species war right in the middle of the city, and suddenly we are not. Those gangs were quite fearsome, I gather. Most of them were asleep or squabbling amongst themselves by the time we arrived, sir. We just had to tidy them away," Vimes volunteered. "Yes, indeed," said Vetinari. "It was quite astonishing, really. Do sit down, by the way. It really is not necessary for you to stand in front of me like a corporal on a charge." "Don't know what you mean, sir," said Vimes, collapsing gratefully into a chair. "You don't?" "I was referring, Vimes, to the speed with which both parties managed to incapacitate themselves with strong liquor at the same time." "I wouldn't know anything about that, sir." That was an automatic reaction. It made life simpler. "No? It appears, Vimes, that while steeling themselves for the fracas to come, both the trolls and the dwarfs came into possession of what I assume they thought was beer. They had been on the been drinking all day, sir," Vimes pointed out. "Indeed, Vimes, and possibly that is why the dwarf contingent were less than cautious in drinking copiously from beer that has been considerably fortified. Areas of Sator Square, I gather, still smell faintly of apples, Vimes. One could come to believe, therefore, that what they were drinking was in fact a mixture of strong beer and scumble, which is, as you know, distilled from apples." Mostly apples, sir, said Vimes helpfully. Quite. The cocktail is known as fluff, I believe. As to the trolls, one might speculate that it would be very hard to find anything to make their beer even more dangerous than it palpably is. But I wonder if you have heard, Vimes, that an admixture of various metallic salts produces a drink known as Luglar, or Big Hammer. Can't say I do, sir. Vimes, some of the flagstones in the plaza have actually been etched by the stuff. Sorry about that, sir. Vetinari drummed his fingers on the table. What would you do if I asked you an outright question, Vimes?
I'd tell you a downright lie, sir.
Then I will not do so, said Vetinari, smiling faintly.
Thank you, sir. Nor will I.
Where are your prisoners?
We spread them around the watch-house yards, said Vimes. As they wake up, we hose them clean, take their names, give them a receipt for their weapon and a hot drink, and push them out into the street.
"Their weapons are culturally very important to them, Vimes," said Vetinari.
"Yes, I know. I myself have a strong cultural bias against getting my brains bashed in and my knees cut off," said Vimes, stifling a yawn and wincing as his ribs objected.
"Indeed. Were there any casualties in the battle?"
"None that won't heal," Vimes grimaced. "I have to report that Mr. A.E. Pessimal sustained a broken arm and multiple bruises, though."
Vetinari actually looked taken aback. "The inspector? What was he doing?"
Attacking a troll, sir."
"I'm sorry. Mr. A.E. Pessimal attacked a troll?"
"Yes, sir."
"A.E. Pessimal," Vetinari repeated.
"That's a man, sir."
"A whole troll?"
"Yes, sir. With his teeth, sir."
"Mr. A.E. Pessimal, you are sure? Small man, very clean shoes?"
"Yes, sir."
Vetinari grabbed a helpful question from the gathering throng.
"Why?"
Vimes coughed.
"Well, sir."
The troll mob was a tableau. Trolls stood or sat or lay where they had been when the big hammer had struck. There were a few slow imbibers who put up a bit of a fight, and one who had stuck with a bottle of looted sherry put up a spirited last-drop stand until Golem Constable Dorfall picked him up bodily and bounced him on his head. Vimes walked through it all as the squad dragged or rolled slumbering trolls into neat lines to await the wagons. And then... The day was not improving for Brick. He'd drunk a beer. Well, maybe more than one. Where was the harm in debt? And now, Dev, right in front of him, wearing one of them helmets and everything, was, yeah, could be a dwarf, insofar as the fizzing, sizzling pathways of his brain were capable of deciding anything at all. What the hell, they decided. It wasn't a troll, and that was what it was all about, right? And here was his club, right here, in his hand. Instinct caused Vimes to turn as a troll opened red eyes, blinked, and began to swing a club. Too slowly in the suddenly frozen time, he tried to dive away, and he felt the club smash into his side and lift him up and tip him onto the ground. He could hear shouting as the troll lumbered forward, club raised again to make Vimes at one with the bedrock. Brick became aware that he was being attacked. He stopped what he was doing and, with sparks going whizzle in his brain, looked down at his right knee. Some little gnome or something was attacking him with a blunt sword and kicking and screaming like a mad thing. He put it down to the drink, like the feeling that his ears were giving off flames, and brushed a thing away with a flip of his hand. Vimes, helpless, saw A.E. Pessimal tumble across the plaza and watched the troll turn back to the clubbing at hand. But Detritus, arriving behind it now, pulled it around with one shovel-sized hand, and here came the detritus fist, like the wrath of gods. For Brick, everything went dark. "You wish me to believe," said Lord Vetinari, "that Mr. A.E. Pessimal single-handedly attacked a troll?"
"Both hands, sir," said Vimes.
"And feet, too. And tried to bite it, we think."
"Isn't that certain death?" said Vetinari.
"That didn't seem to worry him, sir." Vimes had last seen A.E. Pessimal being bandaged by Igor and smiling in a semi-conscious way. Watchmen were dropping in all the time to say things like, "Hi, big man," and slap him on the back. The world had turned for A.E. Pessimal.
"Might I inquire, Vimes, why one of my most conscientious and most decidedly civilian clerks was in a position to do this?"
Vimes shifted uncomfortably.
He was inspecting, learning all about us, sir."
He gave Vetinari a look that said, "If you take this any further, I will have to lie." Vetinari returned one that said, "I know."
"You yourself are not too badly injured," the patrician said aloud.
"Just a few scratches, sir," said Vimes. Vetinari gave him a look that said, "Broken ribs, I'm certain of it." Vimes returned one that said, "Nothing." Vetinari wandered over to the window and stared down at the waking city. He didn't speak for some time and then let out a sigh.
"Such a shame, I think, that so many of them were born here," he said.
Vimes stuck with saying nothing. It generally sufficed.
Perhaps I should have taken action against that wretched dwarf, the veterinari went on.
Yes, sir.
You think so? A wise ruler thinks twice before directing violence against someone because he does not approve of what they say. Once again, Vimes did not comment. He himself directed violence daily and with a certain amount of enthusiasm against people because he didn't approve of them saying things like, "Give me all your money," or "What are you going to do about it, copper?" But perhaps rulers had to think differently. Instead, he said, "Someone else didn't, sir." "Thank you for that, Vimes," said the patrician, turning around sharply. "And have you found out who they are yet?" "Investigations are continuing, sir. Last night's affair got in the way." "Is there any evidence that it was a troll?"
"There is puzzling evidence, sir. We are assembling a jigsaw, you might say. Except that we haven't got any of the edges, and it'd help if we had the lid of the box," he added to himself. And because Vetinari's face bore a hungry look, Vimes continued aloud, "If you're expecting me to pull a magic rabbit out of my helmet, sir, it'll be a cooked one. The dwarfs are certain it was a troll. There's 1,000 years of history telling them. They don't need proof, and the trolls don't think it was a troll, but probably wish it was. This isn't about a murder, sir. Something inside them's gone click, and it's time for all good men, well, you know what I mean, to fight Coombe Valley all over again. Something else is going on in that mine, I know it. Something bigger than murder. All those tunnels, what are they for? All those lies? I can smell lies, and the place is full of them."
"Much hangs on this, Vimes," said Vetinari. "It's bigger than you know. I have this morning had a clax from Rhys Reeson, the Low King. All politicians have their enemies, of course. There are, shall we say, factions that disagree with him, his policy toward us, his conciliatory approaches to the troll clans, his stance on the whole wretched Ha'ak thing. And now there are stories about a troll killing a grag, and, yes, rumours that the Watch has threatened the dwarfs." Vetinari held up a pale hand as Vimes opened his mouth to protest. "We need to know the truth, Vimes. Commander Sam Vimes's truth. It may count for more than you think. In the plains, certainly, and much further. People know about you, Commander. Descendant of a watchman who believed that if a corrupted court will not behead an evil king, then the watchman should do it himself." "It was only one king," Vimes protested. "It wasn't a habit."
"Sam Vimes once arrested me for treason," said Vetinari calmly, "and Sam Vimes once arrested a dragon. Sam Vimes stopped a war between nations by arresting 2 high commands. He's an arresting fellow, Sam Vimes. Sam Vimes killed a werewolf with his bare hands and carries law with him like a lamp. Where did all that come from?"
"Watchmen across half the continent will say that Sam Vimes is as straight as an arrow, can't be corrupted, won't be turned, never took a bribe. Listen to me. If Rhys falls, the next Low King will not be one who is prepared to talk to the trolls. Can I make it simple for you? Those clans whose leaders have been talking to Rhys will in all likelihood feel that they have been made fools of, overthrow said leaders, and replace them with trolls too belligerent and stupid to be fools. And there will be a war, Vimes. It'll come here. It won't be a gang crumble such as you thwarted last night. We won't be able to hold fast or stand aloof. Because we have our own fools, Vimes, as I'm sure you know, who'll insist we pick sides. Coombe Valley will be everywhere. Find me a murderer, Vimes. Hound them down and bring them into the daylight. Troll or dwarf or human, it doesn't matter. Then at least we shall have the truth, and can make use of it. It is rumour and uncertainty that is our enemy now. The Low King's throne trembles, Vimes, and thus do the foundations of the world."
Vetinari paused, and carefully squared up the paperwork in front of him as if he now felt he'd gone too far.
"However, obviously I do not wish to put you under any kind of pressure," he finished. In Vimes's confused, lukewarm brain, one word bobbed to the surface.
"Crumble," he said.
Lord Vetinari's secretary leaned down and whispered into his master's ear.
"Ah, I believe I meant rumble," said Vetinari brightly.
Vimes was still trying to cope with the international news digest.
"All this over one murder," he said, trying to stifle a yawn. No, Vimes, you said it yourself. All this over thousands of years of tension and politics and power struggles. In recent years, things have gone in certain ways, causing power to shift. There are those who would like it to shift back, even if it returns on a tide of blood. Who cares about one dwarf? But if his death can be turned into a casus belli... Here Lord Vetinari looked at Vimes's sleepy eyes and went on, "That is a reason for war. Then suddenly he is the most important dwarf in the world. When did you last get some proper sleep, Vimes?" Vimes muttered something about, "Not long."